The Red Eye Radio Podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He's Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. It's Thursday. Gary, how are you?
I have no idea. I'm sorry. I'm just in the middle of reading this article. The Washington Post reported in a... Oh, by the way, hi, everybody.
And
I'm actually glad to be here and everything else.
Station that cares.
Exactly. The Washington Post reported in a profile of Beto O'Rourke and his wife Amy's marriage published Tuesday that... O'Rourke allegedly pranked his wife Amy once by putting baby poop in a bowl and telling her that it was avocado.
Oh, we've all done that. Are you kidding me? Seriously.
That from the Washington Post. So there you go.
Wow.
I don't even know where to go with that. We just found that right before we went on the air.
Seriously. I say you don't fully mature in that case until you're like 95.
That comes from yesterday there was a poll out there, or not a poll, but a study from scientists that you don't fully become an adult till you're in your 30s. So we had fun with that yesterday.
And with some presidential candidates, it apparently still hasn't happened.
Yes. Coming up on the show today, the latest poll on what Americans think about 16-year-olds voting. They're not too high on it, by the way. Mm-hmm. I'll look at the McCain-Trump debate from a completely different angle. That coming up here in just a moment. A question that any Democrat cannot ask, that one of the candidates asked yesterday, that you can't ask it. Mm-hmm. The president says tariffs will continue on China even after a deal for a substantial period of time. My next story, which may relate directly to that, the Fed says growth for 2019 will only be 2.1%, which means it's back to Obama-level growth. Mm-hmm. We'll get to those reasons why, as we did on yesterday's show. Mm-hmm. New study, more millennials depend on the bank of mom and dad to buy homes. Imagine going to your parents and saying, look, can I get a down payment for a home? I'm sorry, I just was thinking of my parents.
Yeah, right.
That if I was in my 20s and 30s, could you give me a down payment for a home? What, are you out of your mind?
Yeah, you know, my oldest bought her first home, what was that, a year and a half ago? Somewhere around there. And, you know, I gave her advice, but...
Oh, yeah.
I don't have money to give you. That's something that you're going to... You know, because honestly, I think with something like that, especially, you don't want to put them out there to fail. Because you get a foreclosure on your record and it's going to be a problem. That's not some, you know, department store credit card that you didn't pay off in time. That's a big deal. And we went through it. I mean, step by step. And, you know, she got it done on her own.
Yeah. If I were a parent, the first thing I would be thinking of is, well, number one, I can't believe you asked me.
Yeah, right.
Number two, no, that's the last thing I'd want to do because a home is yours.
Mm-hmm.
And that means it's yours, which means your work, your sweat, your effort has to go into it for you to fully appreciate it. And really anything in life, to fully appreciate it. If something is given to you free, you don't appreciate it. You don't appreciate it the same as if you earned it and worked for it.
And on something that big, I think if you're an adult and you think your parents, I mean, if your parents, you know, give you a huge chunk of cash specifically for that reason. Now, it is done oftentimes at a wedding. You know, you'll get a $10,000 gift or something like that. I mean, we never did that, but I mean, the idea of if you've gotten this huge handout from your parents, you expect them to come through when you need to help making a payment.
Who was it? Was it Clint Eastwood who said he did not help his son at all?
Right. I saw his son recently on a podcast, in fact.
Right.
You know, and his son talks about it. His son's an actor now. Looks just like him. But he talked about it and said, you know, I spent time with my mom and my dad. His mom was a flight attendant. And so he spent time, you know, living with his mom in a really normal life and then spent some time, you know, living with his dad. And he said, I mean, there were life lessons that you had to learn and you had to go out and do it on your own. And,
right.
You know, and that was kind of what he dealt with. Can you imagine? Not only are you Clint Eastwood's son, but you look just like him. And so, you know, he's doing some acting and you're probably having to live up to that name. But yeah, he talked about it during that podcast that his father didn't really, you know, throw a bunch of money or help his way. It just, he gave him advice and said, this is how it works.
Well, you know, we had talked about that with the whole college admissions thing, that if, you know, the last thing, especially I think a lot of people that are rich are extremely sensitive to it.
Mm-hmm.
That, look, just because I'm rich doesn't mean you're automatically rich.
Right. Yeah.
You have to go out and find your own path because that's what's best for you.
Right. Right.
You learning how to earn your own way.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you eventually don't end up in the family business.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you don't end up eventually getting you know, a trust from your parents, or that you eventually inherit all of their wealth.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, early on, it is the fact that no, you've got to go do it on your own.
Right.
And
right.
Many people that are well off actually do that and say, no, I don't want my kid to end up being spoiled. I don't want to do what those celebrities did who said, okay, let's treat my kid's life as symbolism and imagery.
Yeah, let me build the perfect kid.
Right.
In everybody else's eyes.
Right, exactly. That's what you're with the whole school admissions thing, that's what you're doing.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that, too, is with Lori Loughlin's daughter, she had a substantial following on social media.
Yes.
I didn't see anywhere that it was, I think it was known that, you know, her mom was an actress, but I didn't see anywhere where that was her mom that, you know, did that. All the stories I read implied that was of her own doing. And you can make a ton of money if you're on social media and you've got a huge following, you've got videos on YouTube. That's something you can make money at. That's something that I would look at and go, wow, you found your own way. That's, you know, that's great. She might actually be one day, I think of like Miley Cyrus and Billy Ray. Okay, of the two, one's a giant in terms of pop culture, and the other one, you know, had a few country hits. I mean, you know, relatively speaking, if you think about it. So I would want my kid to go on and do their own thing, whether it's something I do or not. You know?
I know exactly where you're going there. Now, that does bring me to the point that I see. Was it Miley Cyrus at Woodstock?
Yeah. So here was the headline. I think we talked about this during the show off the air yesterday.
The 50th anniversary.
It's the Woodstock 50 thing coming up in August. So the headline was Miley Cyrus poses nude to announce she's going to be at Woodstock 50. And I thought, that's not news. News would have been Miley Cyrus puts her clothes on to announce. You know, here's the thing.
No Foo Fighters?
No Foo Fighters.
You can't have Woodstock 50 without the Foo Fighters.
The one act that sticks out for me is Rival Sons. I'm a huge fan of Rival Sons. They're a California band, very talented. They're playing day two, I think. And I thought to myself, because you and I were talking about, all right, what about the, it's got to be kind of a hipster vibe today. That's the new hippie, right? And it does. It has that. There's a pretty good cross mix of that if you look at all the artists that are going to be there. And Rival Sons fits right in. But a friend of mine works, you know, in that industry, and they've been doing a ton of festivals. And he tells me, he said, the artist really, they like the high profile ones that get a ton of media attention, but there's a ton of festivals now, and it keeps a lot of the other older artists working, you know what I mean? Because they can have a huge audience, and maybe some exposure will kind of lift their new project or something, but he was telling me that they don't like it because they get like a 20, 30 minute set. You know, you don't get out, you barely get warmed up and you're done.
You're not doing your show.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but I see every year, and I know a couple of acquaintances that were in 80s bands, mm-hmm. and they do the 80s tour every mm-hmm. year, mm-hmm. and they might only play six or seven songs, but they're happy just to be working.
That's my point. It works for some of the other bands that won't get a huge headlining, and they won't get they won't fill a huge venue either. But in this case, they can have that exposure in front of them. You know, they can have, who knows, tens of thousands of people where they wouldn't be able to do that on their own.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the 80s tour, which goes around every single year, which if you look at it, you're like, oh, those are all the tunes that we played, you know, in the 80s. And even some that are just one or two hit wonders.
Right.
Yeah. So they really don't have a lot more than two or three songs to begin with.
Right.
But the songs are so well known, but they go out and they play 6,000-7,000 seat arenas and outdoor festivals, and everybody's going crazy and the audience is energetic and they're making money, because what would they be doing the House of Blues.
Right. Yeah.
They'd be doing venues that seat between 500 and 1,000 if it wasn't for the whole 80s thing behind them. So it keeps them working.
You know, Dick Dale passed away, the surfer guitarist. He's a guy who created a sound.
Yes, he did.
A real sound that became, you know, and you may not, if you weren't a musician or a big follower, you didn't know, maybe you didn't know his name, but you knew the sound. You heard that sound that he created. And he talked about in recent years that he had to get out there. He had to keep playing because of his illness. He had a number of illnesses, actually, and his medical expenses just to afford everything that he needed every month was thousands of dollars a month. So he had to get out there and play as much as possible. And that's probably the case with a lot of those older artists.
Also coming up, the latest presidential poll is out there, and still three out of the four top candidates are white men. Two of them are old white men.
Yes, very old.
By the way, we're not the ones that are focusing on the identity politics.
Nope.
We know the other side is, mm-hmm. and we're just bringing it up in order to see if they will ever react to it, which they have not as of yet.
No.
The FBI is now investigating the certification of the Boeing 737 MAX, plus your calls and comments. Audio cuts coming, just a ton of stuff to talk about. Got a great show ahead. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Hurley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. All right, I want to play an audio cut from almost 50 years ago.
Hmm.
Just for the heck of it. I happened to see it. Somebody posted on social media yesterday, and I said, with all the talk going on, you know, in Ocasio-Cortez and the Green New Deal and the fact that, you know, we're going to boil the earth, correct?
Yes.
Who used the word boil a couple of years ago? Who was it?
It was Obama.
Was it Obama who said
we're
going to
boil?
Oh, in Africa.
When he was in Africa,
yes,
said,
yes.
Don't start having any thoughts, any good thoughts about getting air conditioning or cars. No.
Right.
The oceans will boil.
The oceans will boil. That's right. He said it in Africa. And you made the point the other day. I don't know how we got on it. You said, what if Trump had said something like that?
Think about that.
He'd be
think
viewed of, as a racist.
If Trump visited Africa and then as he was leaving, hey, about to get on his massive, because that's exactly the way that the media would react. He's going to get on a very comfortable, huge airplane that is designed just for one person. And that would have been, you know, the never ending reaction by the media.
Right.
Can you imagine?
It was Obama telling the continent of Africa.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, look, you can't have what we have. Now we're gonna have to cut back, but you can't have air conditioning, you can't have cars, and you can't have all the modern things that we have.
We
because
we can
the oceans
it.
Will boil.
Yeah, we can have it. You can't have it. Well, we've already got it.
He was also implying we would have to cut back on
yes,
ours.
Right. Yeah. But as if just, that, that's was, actually going to happen.
Right. It was just bizarre, though. But I found this from the end of a Walter Cronkite broadcast from 1972.
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
Mm-mm.
Here we go.
British professor Hubert Lamb says that a new ice age is creeping over the northern hemisphere. Even then, it won't be as bad as the last ice age 60,000 years ago. Then New York, Cincinnati, St. Louis were under 5,000 feet of ice. Presumably, no traffic moved and school was let out for the day. And that's the way it is. Monday, September 11th, 1972.
All right.
I'm doing that. I played it for my own entertainment. Because that's where we were back then. We were going to have an ice age, and there was the consensus was in, an ice age is coming.
Yes. Did we ever get that ice age?
I thought we did because I went through the blizzard of 77.
Well, maybe that was it. Maybe that was it.
So, yeah. It might have only lasted 3 days or that one winter of 77 and 78 also. That was also a bad winter.
Well, you know, we had our own version of the year without a summer. There actually was a long ago, a year with what they called it, a year without a summer. But it was early, mid-80s. I can't remember when. And it was just the mildest summer I've ever experienced in Texas.
We had one, I remember, in the Northeast. Oh, in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. I remember how cold it really never got. Normally, as it would get into the into the 80s all the time, there were just an enormous number of days where it was in the 50s and the 60s and just didn't get out of it. But, you know, they did have, you know, the, when was it? Oh, when did that volcano go off? And it was at the 1800s where they had the,
right.
It was actually the year without a summer worldwide.
Right. And that's, in fact, during that summer, that's when Mary Shelley wrote Frankenstein.
Yeah.
That would contribute to it, right? The gloominess. You just go right Frankenstein.
Frankenstein?
It could be Frankenstein.
Frankenstein.
Putting on the Ritz.
Does anybody have any idea what we're talking about?
Yeah, they do. Okay. Our audience is very smart.
No.
He's drunk.
Walk this way.
Need some help with the bags? Yeah, I'll get the blonde. You get the redhead.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh. Young Frankenstein.
Man, that's just greatness. That's comedy greatness.
Could you have it today, or would that be too politically incorrect?
There's how many lines? Forget about getting to Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
We won't even approach that one. We would have to, you know, stick with the Young Frankenstein and just go through the lines on that movie, and you're probably going to have a ton of execs with any studio pretty much say no, you can't have that line in there. And if you did, you'd be trolled endlessly.
Gene Wilder would be demonized.
Oh yeah.
Richard Pryor would be demonized.
Oh my goodness.
Carlin
yes.
would be demonized.
Yes, they all would. For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
Historic flooding continues across parts of the central U.S. this week, especially in Iowa, Nebraska, and states that border the Mississippi River will start to see more floodwaters surge their banks. Farmers are anxious to get out and turn over those fields for spring planting in this heavy agricultural region, but it'll be some time before they're able to do that. A coastal low and surge of Atlantic moisture is moving up the eastern seaboard this morning. North Carolina, the mid-Atlantic, will see some soaking rain, and as that system tracks up into the Northeast, for Friday we'll see locally heavy rain and mountain snow for New England. New York City will see rain through Saturday, high today 50. Atlanta, 20% chance of showers, high 61. Sunny for Dallas, high 73. Look for weekend storms as we turn the page on winter and welcome spring 2019. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. 866-90-RED-EYE.
25 hours of reality. Every week, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. One of the things we never got to talk about, probably because it's just stupid, but there was a poll on it, was the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi and everybody jumping on letting 16-year-olds vote. Some of the memes on that were just tremendous over the last week or so. Some of the memes about allowing a 16-year-old to vote.
Right.
Well, Rasmussen did the polling on it. What do you think? Does the majority of Americans want 16-year-olds to vote? What do you think?
No.
Do the majority of Democrats want 16-year-olds to vote?
No.
Because that would be the, one of the things that people would say. Well, yeah, the Democrats want 16-year-olds to vote because 16-year-olds are more likely to vote Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
Rasmussen polling shows that just 17% of likely U.S. voters favor lowering the legal national voting age from 18 to 16. An overwhelming 74% rejecting the idea. The other few,
I don't know.
Yeah.
So that's 74% against, 17 for, and the rest,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Now,
no.
Breaking it down to political parties, only 25% of Democrats support lowering the voting age, and 9% of Republicans support it. Broken down between race, 32% of blacks support lowering the voting age, and 16% of whites favor lowering the voting age.
Mm-hmm.
Both male and female voters are relatively on the same page. According to the poll, 77% of males surveyed oppose lowering the voting age, and 71% of females oppose lowering it as well. The poll also showed 65% of 18 to 39-year-olds oppose lowering the voting age. 77% of those 40 to 64 do not want to see the voting age lowered, and 84% of those 65 or older say the voting age should not be lowered either. And you know why those 80, it's higher for those 65 or older? Because when you get to be 65 or older, you've dealt with all the 16-year-olds as your children, and by the time you get to 65 or older, most likely, you have dealt with your grandchildren who are 16 years old. And therefore, you've been hit twice by the 16-year-olds, and your experience and therefore wisdom says no.
100% of 16-year-olds said yes in the survey. Also, 100% of 16-year-olds also asked, I'm sorry, what was the question? I still say yes.
Voting?
Yeah. Yes. It's it's ridiculous.
So the survey of 1,000 likely voters, so you have to be over the age of 18 in order to take the poll. So they didn't poll 16-year-olds. So
they should have.
Likely.
That's the only people that count.
That would have.
Who cares what 18-year-old thinks?
Well, unfortunately, it would be the representatives that have to answer to the likely voters.
Not if they're voted out by 16-year-olds. See, I'm debating Democrat.
If they eventually get it,
No, they're going to take over. They're just going to show up with Ocasio-Cortez or gang of 8-year-olds.
By the way, the reducing the voting age to 16 was debated on the House floor 2 weeks ago when it came up as an amendment for the People Act. Democrat Massachusetts Representative Presley proposed the amendment, but it was defeated 126 to 305 with just one Republican. And check this one out.
Mm-hmm.
Texas Representative Michael Burgess supporting the measure. 125 yeah. Democrats and one Republican voted to lower the voting age to 16 years of age. Now, he defended it by saying in a statement, because you wonder, what would his defense be?
Mm-hmm.
Those who pay taxes should have a vote in our democracy. Mm. As a teenager, I worked at a pizza shop and paid taxes. Mm. Well, then, should we have a law that only those who pay taxes should be able to vote?
Right.
Now, when I was 16, I was working. I didn't make enough to pay taxes. I had to pay Social Security, which they took out. But I didn't have to pay actual taxes. I didn't make enough.
Right.
I'm assuming, I don't know what the level is right now where you don't pay anything.
I'm not sure what
well,
that
Well, let me ask you this question. Would it be $12,000?
Yeah, I don't know. I would have to look that up, yeah.
Right. But I remember when I... When I was young, I think it was like $2,500 back then you had to make. Well, mm-hmm. at 16, you weren't making that kind of money.
Right.
When you're in
just
high school, you're not
working
making,
a
right.
few hours a week. Yeah.
Right. There may be some people that have to and quit high school and ended up working that might reach it, but it would be an extremely small minority, I'm going to assume.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that so many, the fact that Bernie Sanders almost took the Democrat nomination on the fact that you shouldn't have to work and go to college. It should be paid for completely
right.
because you should be able to focus completely on college and not have to work at all. I don't know. What is the percentage of 16 to 18-year-olds working now as compared to when I was young?
No, it's a good question because I know right now, especially with restaurants, they're having the restaurant industry as a whole is having a tough time finding people to work. Fast food especially. And that gets back to the helicopter parents.
Snowplow
parents. But the insistence that, no, you shouldn't do that, which is, you know, the parent and the child makes that choice, fine. With us, it was, if you wanted any money at all, you're going to have to go work on the weekend. You're going to have to go do something. And so...
Well, even though... Look, we got an allowance. We had chores we had to do when I was real young. Mm-hmm. But there were chores that we had to do. But when I think it was 14, I'm trying to think of how old you could be a paper boy.
Oh,
As soon as
for me, it was
14.
It was younger than 16. Yeah,
right. Definitely younger than 16. I think mm-hmm. it was 14.
Yeah,
because you didn't need working papers to be a paper boy.
No,
but
it was a contractor job.
Right. As soon as we were able to do it, yeah,
we were
independent contractors.
Yeah.
Right. As soon as we were able to do it, because you got paid, from what I remember, per paper.
Yeah.
And collected. All I remember was what I loved the most was the weekend edition, where I remember you got 5 cents a copy.
Mm-hmm.
And that my brother and I were just, because we did it together, we were just totally stoked. We wanted that 5 cents on the weekend.
Did you ever think about trying to, you know, like double your route, take over another route and ramp it up? I was always trying to do more, but there was no time in the day. You couldn't.
There wasn't enough. Yeah, we were trying to do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We actually, though, found, I think probably did it for a year, and we found out that cutting lawns and doing lawn work took less time and paid more.
That's actually the first job, my first job unofficially, I mean.
Yeah, that's when we went from doing, but I know for us, it was strictly the fact that we didn't want to be, we knew that if we, and I think this is how a lot of teenagers, how we used to think,
mm-hmm.
that if I took the money from my parents, there were conditions.
Yeah.
I didn't like the conditions from my parents. Now, what I found out, though, is even when I took the paper out, or even when we ended up, you know, doing lawn work instead, it didn't matter. You did the chores whether you got the allowance or not.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Saturday morning's lawn day.
Yeah, when we found out, oh no, you have an obligation to your family, irrespective of whether you get an allowance or not.
Oh yeah,
we weren't pleased, but that's the 14-year-old mind, is it not?
No, I mean you didn't want to do the work,
right?
You wanted to eat cereal and watch cartoons.
Right.
Still at 14.
And back then, we became adults in our mid-20s, not our mid-30s.
Oh yeah.
That's a big lie.
Yeah, we were fully matured by, you know, 16. We should have been able to vote.
Well, let's put it this way. Neither of us, even in our 20s, would have put poop in a bowl and tried to convince our wives that it was avocado.
I wouldn't have done that when I was 3.
In case you're just tuning in, apparently that's what the Washington Post reported. Robert Francis O'Rourke did with his wife when he pranked his wife. So there you go.
And secondly, where are you buying avocados, man? You probably need to find a new place.
So are we done then? Are we? Now, we didn't bring it up last week when this hit or a couple weeks ago, but are we done with this now?
What?
Because I still saw more, and this has stayed around on social media, the 16-year-old vote. Are we done with it? Is this going to disappear now for a while?
I think we were done the moment somebody mentioned it.
Well, we were done, mm-hmm. But is the country done with it now? Can we move on to something else?
No, I think the country was done with it. I don't know anybody aside from somebody throwing out this wild idea, knowing it's never going to happen, just like the Green New Deal or anything else the Democrats are talking about right now. Free college for everybody. All these ideas, they're throwing these huge unicorns into the air. Never going to happen. They know they're not going to happen. They know they can't pay for it. They just need your vote. I'll get you something. I won't deliver. I'll get you something.
I just realized, am I in trouble? I never filed with the IRS for the money I earned as a paperboy. I don't think I was required to.
No, I don't think
you were. 14. Okay, I just want to make sure.
Yeah.
Can they go back and get me for that?
Yes. They can, and will.
Do I need a lawyer?
Imagine the fines and interest, all the interest on $20.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE. Let's go to CJ in Madison, Wisconsin, about the 16-year-old vote. CJ, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show. Hi.
Hi, Eric and Gary.
Hey.
Love your show.
Thanks.
You know, how do you argue with Santa Claus? you know, they offer the 16-year-olds to vote. They offer illegals to vote. They offer free tuition. So, I mean, the Democrats, it's an easy way to get support and votes when you offer free everything. There's no justification for it, really. But that's what they sell. And it's an, you know, Wisconsin governor offered illegal free tuition. Offered driver's licenses, and so, you know, it's easy, and we look like the bad guys. Regardless, I'm a libertarian, but we look bad because we're arguing giving
right.
people everything.
Well, you're actually not a you're actually not a libertarian to them. You're anti-Santa.
That's right. You're an anti-Santist.
Humbug.
You're an anti-Santist.
You're an anti-Santist. I like that.
The anti-Santist.
What is the symbol for that?
I don't know, but it involves a bowl full of jelly. I'll tell you that right now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no, it's really sad. It's sad what this has come to, because, you know, it really is true. We don't play the game as good as they do.
Well,
right.
We would teach them to fish.
But their game is easier. The game is easier to say everything can be provided for you. The game is easier when you tell somebody, when I tell you you're a victim, when I tell you nothing is your fault, when I tell you that your lot in life, that, look, you can't make it because somebody else has oppressed you, and therefore you need and you deserve and you have earned, even though you haven't, their money and their property.
They're not even adults yet, and they react like children.
Right, it's an easier sell. It's easier as a parent to spoil a kid than to discipline a kid.
Oh, sure.
But it's right to discipline a child.
Right.
That's what we're dealing with.
Absolutely.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America. And the world. 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Hurley.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
And I say, and the world.
And the world. The globe.
Well, no, since I've been saying that, and it's because one of our great listeners in Italy said, come on, you keep saying across America, you're also across the world. I'm like, you're right. And since I've been throwing that in occasionally to start the top of the hour, I think it's, I'm doing this from memory. I think it's Matt from the Russian Republic who gave us a shout out yesterday on email.
If you're listening internationally, write us an email. Go to redeyeradioshow.com. Click on Contact Us, and you'll see the email there, and you can write us an email. Let us know where you're listening.
And we know that a lot of Americans do, because there isn't much live in the United States overnight.
Right.
And I don't even know cable-wise what's live. I mean, I'm sure they have a news staff.
Yeah.
But there's nothing that's constantly live throughout the entire night. And so we know that so many Americans, abroad listen, and even Australians.
Yeah. G'day, mate.
I said that because we know we have Australian listeners, right?
I heard from a listener whose father was a longtime listener to our flagship station, and his father recently passed. And he talked about when his dad, even when his dad, I think, never lived close here in Texas, because, back then, back in the day, the signal could skip. So, you would get in the middle of the night, back in the Bill Mack days, you would get a lot of the people listening. Hey, I'm listening. I got your signal from this. I mean, it wasn't, of course, pre-internet. It was the signal skipping. But Bill told me he would regularly get letters from people all over the U.S. and occasionally someone just really far out there where a signal skipped. You know, of course, with the web now, you don't need that.
When I worked, because it's interesting, because we all go through the different incarnations of the show, which goes all the way back to 1969,
right.
Which was Bill Mack, this is the 50th anniversary.
Yep,
if you take,
in fact, it's this month, March of 69,
is the 50th anniversary of all the different shows that led up to Red Eye Radio,
right?
Which was originally Bill Mack.
Mm-hmm.
In 1969, I remember it had to be the mid-90s when I was working at our great affiliate, WLS in Chicago. I remember driving home after working there, and it would be 2-3 in the morning. and I'd be driving back, and I was living in Rockford at the time, Rockford, Illinois. I'd be driving back, and I would listen to him from WB. I, you know, be scanning, okay, what's out there, and I could hear, you know, I would listen to Bill Mack as I'm driving, you know, back to Rockford. So
I remember in when I was a kid, I mean, that was kind of a regular thing, you know, growing up in Texas. But that was a regular thing if we were, because my dad liked to travel, drive at night. You know, we lived in South Texas. All of our relatives lived in North Texas. And so my dad, you know, would often, choose to, all right, we'll load the car up and then late at night. And then, of course, that would take you past midnight before we got to our destination, grandmother's house, and we would listen. And it was, I don't know, it was odd in the mid-90s when I started working with him, because I just felt like I was, you know, I got this front row seat. For those that don't know, Bill Mack, a legendary radio personality. He's going to, I told him recently, I said, you know, you're going to outlive us all. He's doing great, by the way, still doing a lot of work. But he, Grammy Award-winning songwriter, wrote Blue for Leanne Rimes. I wrote Drinking Champagne and a whole list of great songs. You know, when he started back then, the movie of the year, the Oscar winner was, Best Picture was The Midnight Cowboy.
Right? Yeah.
Which, you think about it, that kind of launched John Voight's career. I really catapulted it, you know, if you think about it. Who is a conservative these days, which is interesting. I've always thought, by the way, John Voight could play Trump. I think he could play Trump. But I think he could.
Yeah, yes.
So someone called Bill one night. Well, a truck driver called him from a truck stop. You know, you had to stop. For those under the age of 150, back in the day, you had to stop and use a payphone. You know, so someone called him and said, hey, they should call you the Midnight Cowboy because you're on late at night, you know, and you're up with us. And that's kind of where that came from. That was his nickname, you know, and his handle for many years. But you think about and all the, you know, the great stations that are out there, all these huge 50,000 watt stations.
The 50, and we've got a ton of 50,000 watt clear channel. Mm-hmm. And I know for me, my dad, before I even got a transistor radio, my dad was huge because he had one, so I had to have one, which was the crystal radios.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, no, give me a transistor. No, you need to know the basics of radio. Here's a crystal radio.
Right, right.
And there was this little set, I'll never forget, attaching one of the wires to the screen in the window in the upstairs bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And having had these little headphones on and listening, you know, all across the nation. And then when I got my transistor radio, my brother and I with the transistor radios on, you know, the little 9-volt battery in there, listening to trying to pick up. And it's amazing to me today because we're on all these stations. WABC in New York, WJR out of Detroit, WLS in Chicago, KDKA Pittsburgh.
Right.
You know, these great, and they were, you know, different formatted back then.
Right.
Music stations, but we would, for sports.
Yeah.
Just for sports alone, and to be able to hear that from far away at night. To me, there was always a certain radio romance to that. I don't know whether it exists today. I don't know whether, because of the digital world that we live in, where you could just pick up the station wherever you are.
Well, that's the thing, because think about that. You know, any person from modern years that was, you know, born or raised in this age doesn't know that feeling of listening to something that's coming from far away, and you're listening to it live. You're listening to it, you know, and it maybe isn't quite the best signal. It's kind of skipping in, but you're really trying to tune it in. You're really trying to, you know, keep that signal. You know, if you're in your car, you're trying to keep that signal going for the longest time, because it was that, you know,
and the heartbreak,
communicating with somebody,
the heartbreak when you might lose the signal.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But it still has to be cool.
Yeah.
Because of the internet, And I can't tell you over the years the number of people from around the world that have contacted us, it is still amazing, and it does have to be cool to be, somewhere in the Russian Republic, as Matt, I believe his name was, who wrote me yesterday, and to be listening to us even on the internet. That to me is still the coolest thing, being so far away. And I know I do it. I got a couple of people that worked for me that once in a while I will, and they don't, work in the Dallas area. They work all over the country.
Right.
But when I listen to them on the internet, it's still the coolest thing but the only difference is it's gotten so good where it seems like they're right there. Mm-hmm. It isn't.
Right.
There was some kind of radio romance when you could hear the signal and there's all the interference, yet the voice was still coming through, which gave you the true impression because of all the static surrounding it. But you could still hear them and you could still hear the music, that it's really far away and you're listening to something that really wasn't meant for you to be listening
to. You felt almost isolated, like, I've got something here that, that really wasn't designed for me, really isn't aimed at me, and I'm able to get it. It made it special. I remember the first time hearing, I remember being aware, I guess, of radio the first time in San Antonio, get in the car. My mom turns on the radio and I heard this, song. I said, "Who's that?" My mom says, "It's the Beatles." It was KTSA, our affiliate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Playing music. And I'll never forget, that was the moment when I thought, oh, wow. And then after that, I was like, okay, what's next? What's the next song? What are they going to do next? What are they going to talk about? Listening to the commercials. I still remember a lot of the commercials back then, even growing up down there. And then when I became a teenager, you would hear all these, great commercials from these legendary rock stations down there that would, that were playing your favorite music and the whole thing, but the commercials with the personalities on them, it became something for me that was like, you felt part of, like you were part of the group, like you were, part of the in crowd, the whole thing. I don't know that there's any duplicating that. I think podcasting does that somewhat today. It depends on the podcast. But I think that's probably the attraction for podcast, is that it's more of an intimate setting, which is something I think you and I have been doing here. We didn't really draw out a playbook, but certainly we wanted it to be a natural conversation.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of things we have to do in preparation for the show and stories we comment on, but our approach to the show has been, let's have a conversation. Let's be real people. Let's be intellectually honest. Let's do everything that we can to make it inviting.
Mine was a little different than yours. My first memories of radio was the guy on the radio telling me I didn't have to go to school that day. That was everything to me.
Right.
I remember thinking, I have a memory of sitting at my parents, at my parents' house at the kitchen table, their first house when we were growing up, the very, very small house, and sitting in this tiny kitchen at the kitchen table and looking at the radio and thinking to myself, I want to be that guy that tells people, that tells the kids that they have the school off for the day. That has to be the coolest job in the world.
Now,
I never thought I'd be doing this.
Well, what's interesting, because you and I have also worked other, other shows on our flagship, and before the internet, even when we had the internet at our flagship WBAP, we still had to announce all the school closures, because you couldn't assume that everyone in your listening audience had, the
internet,
the internet and everything else. And now the schools send you a text directly. You get it immediately. You mention it, but it became a real job. If there were closures in our area, that took up a lot during that programming time, morning or whatever. It was usually morning.
Oh, you have hundreds.
Yeah. So it would just take up all that time because you had to include all of it. Once you start with one, you can't say this and others, this school district and others. You have to include them all.
Yeah, now it's, hey,
Yeah.
Go online and go to our website.
Well, you know, because our ISD years ago started with email and then text messages. And so you would get a text message. You know, they would send that out, blast that out. Now they blast that out. You get it directly.
Yeah.
You know, so.
You don't have to have, it doesn't have to be filtered anymore.
No.
So then we're obsolete.
Yeah, pretty much. Couple of old guys.
If we can't do school closings, we're obsolete.
Yeah.
You know what? At least in my mind. All right, radio is useless.
That's right. Yeah, we all know that. We all know that. Yeah, it's just interesting, you know, watching, I guess, the how communications altogether has changed. Because it really is, everything is about, if you think about it, communications. When something is learned by science, by investigators, by whoever it might be, that's eventually shared with the public. You know, if you think about that, it's a pretty amazing experience. Or it's a pretty amazing world to live in right now.
And just mention it. Thanks, Shane in Australia and Pete working at an oil plant in far northern Canada who's listening.
Wow. So awesome. Yes. Thank you. Thank you. We greatly appreciate that.
That's really cool. So, yeah. So there you go.
Far northern Canada.
Memories of our business.
Yeah.
Of our industry.
Yeah.
All right. 866. We got so much to talk about here today. We'll get to it next. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on DOT drug and alcohol testing. Your employer has requested that you submit a sample for a drug or alcohol test, but you fail to show up. If this happens, you are in violation of DOT regulations. Drivers must understand that refusing to take a drug or alcohol test is treated the same as a failed test. This means you will be immediately removed from your truck. Your employer will then advise you of the next steps in the process. Before you are eligible to drive again, you must take the following steps. You must be evaluated by a substance abuse professional, complete prescribed treatment and counseling, and pass a return-to-duty drug and/or alcohol test. And finally, drivers must take at least 6 follow-up tests in the coming year, but follow-up testing can last up to 5 years. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
All right, so a new poll out there yesterday.
What do you got?
Biden 20. This is the Emerson poll.
All right.
Biden 26, Sanders 26.
All right.
Harris 12, O'Rourke 11. So 3 out of the 4 are white males.
Hmm.
3 out of the 4. Top candidates, 3 of the 4 that are in double figures are white males.
Yeah.
What does this say about the Democratic Party? What does this say? How embarrassed are you, Democrats?
And please measure it by the numbers. Measure that embarrassment in detail, please.
From 1 to 10, how embarrassed are you? And 2, are old white men.
Well, you know, we talk about and have mentioned how the president is really not afraid to answer questions. Sometimes he goes on a little bit too long with his answers.
And sometimes he answers them the wrong way.
Yes.
But he's not afraid.
But he's not afraid. On a debate stage, the only thing you have to do with Beto, because this is, I don't know that Beto's going to get on that debate stage with Trump. But in any setting, I guess, any debate stage, the only thing you have to do is ask him about his white privilege. He's going to apologize for the next hour. It's going to be so easy.
That's how Trump wins every debate.
Look,
bring something up that they have to apologize for.
Right.
For the next And it'll take him an hour to apologize.
Well, I mean, you know, that's it.
Oh, my. That's funny.
Trump would walk out with a bowl of avocados. You know he would. Here, eat these.
When I look at the other polling here, the direction of the country, wrong track. There's three different polls that were taken.
All right.
Wrong track, 28%. Wrong track, 26%. Wrong track, 28%. You know, plus 28%.
Right.
I believe we're on the wrong track. Many. How? Specifically, how? Economically speaking, 71% of Americans are pleased with it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that would be 29% that would not be pleased with the economy. Mm-hmm. All right, so that would make sense. All
right. Yeah, there you go. And I think you're probably...
You actually don't have those numbers. When you actually look at the right track, wrong track.
Right.
Wrong track, 58%, well, 59%, 64%, right direction, 30, 30, 3, and 36. In which way? Economically speaking?
Well,
most people are very happy.
That's this huge populist umbrella question. You think we're on the right track? Well, what do you mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? Because you can ask me, do you think we're on the right track? And I'd look and say, well, the direction of where we've been headed with what the president has done, issue-wise, yes. Democrats, no.
Got the goods. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal. Don't forget the Mid-America Trucking Show coming up starting 1 week from today in Louisville, Kentucky. Drivers go on out there, the Kentucky Fair and Expo Center. We're going to be there in the lobby right next to registration. We've got some really great guests and giveaways throughout the show. Lots going on there at the Mid-America Trucking Show in Louisville, Kentucky. It starts a week from today. It goes through that Saturday. And our friends at Howe's have some really great stuff they're going to be giving away as they're launching some new products and a new look. Very exciting. In fact, I was on the phone with them. Family-owned business for a long time. In fact, they're coming up on their 100th anniversary next year. Wow. Pretty amazing. So we want to invite you out. Come on out, drivers. You can go to our website for more on the Mid-America Trucking Show, redeyeradioshow.com.
I always find the direction of the country surveys interesting because when you look at it, the right direction, here's the Reuters poll, right direction, 30%, wrong track, 58%. Direction of country, economist, YouGov, 33%, right direction, wrong track, 59%. Politico Morning Consult, right direction, 36%, wrong track, 64%. Mm-hmm. Yet 71% of people believe the economy is good and happy with the economy. All right. As of, what, last week? Okay.
Yeah.
I always love to ask, so what does that mean we're on the wrong track? Because that can mean so many different things. I could sit there and say, well, Democrats have the House. We're on the wrong track. Right?
Yeah.
Nobody ever gets specific as to why are we on the wrong track?
Right.
What is it specifically? What, you know, what direction? What is it that's so horrible? Are Democrats willing to say that since Republicans are fighting sanctuary cities, and since Republicans believe that we should have border security, is that the country on the wrong track? What does that mean? Does the wrong track mean Republicans thinking that Democrats support sanctuary cities and believe that illegal immigrants should have free college, the right to vote, that if they're criminals, we should hide them from the federal government? That is the wrong track? So what exactly does that mean when you say the country's in the wrong direction? You've got to be more specific, I think.
Yeah, it goes back to the point that we've made a couple of times in that, well, first of all, you need to start by pre-qualifying your respondents. How much is it that they know?
Yeah, right. We've said that before.
Because
right.
Even if you got into the specific questions of, you know, what they think about this or that, I would want to first know, well, do you actually know what you're talking about?
when the judges came out against the president and his travel ban, and people would ask the question, oh, do you believe that, you know, they'd ask the Democrats. So were the judges right? And the Democrats would say, absolutely. 80% of Democrats say he's right. What about Republicans? 80% of Republicans believe the president's right, not the judges. Yeah. Well, you need to pre-qualify that to find out if the people that are responding have any idea about the three branches of government and what their roles are. Mm-hmm. And you and I had that discussion way back then and said, wait a minute. The vast majority of Americans can't name the three branches of government. If you can't name the three branches of government, you really can't comment as to whether you think the judges or the president was right in either of those areas, because that came down to what? A separation of powers and understanding the separation of powers and the three branches of government. Look, just recently in the whole president of the national emergency, neither side was willing to discuss the constitutional issues there.
Right.
There were a few. You could find us. You could find Mark Levin. I'm sure you could find some other conservatives that would talk about the actual constitutional issues involved there. But for many people, it was, we hate Trump, he's wrong. We love Trump, he's right. Mm-hmm. And the constitutional issues, well, that's a side issue. Oh, you guys are getting into the minutia. Either he's right or he's wrong. Well, actually, that isn't the case. You have to look at the constitutional issues involved in it. But if you don't understand it, I do think we need to pre-qualify people for polling.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, because how do you actually get an honest opinion? An honest opinion has to be, it has to be an educated opinion. Now, if you can answer the questions as to how much you know about a, you know, whatever it is, issue, topic, and you still have an opinion that I, you know, disagree with, okay, that's one thing. But the uneducated opinion, because first of all, we go back to the very basic idea of people acting in their own self-interest. Okay, so politically that becomes dangerous, but it becomes especially dangerous when people have no idea what they're talking about or don't care to learn it. And if they're not going to educate themselves on how an economy works, if they're not going to think it through, I mean, going back to that couple in California, well, I didn't know that that we were going to have to pay for Obamacare. We supported Obamacare. Why are we having to pay for it? Well, because that was going to be the case all along. And if you didn't think it through, if you weren't thoughtful about it, if you just started clapping and going, yay, Green New Deal, yay, then you're going to end up with a bunch of people who also want to do away with the Electoral College and believe that if they just clap loud enough, they can make the government, or they can encourage the government, force the government, however you want to phrase it, to give you something, to give them something, and your rights be damned. Well, it's not how it works at all. And they don't care to learn it. Either they are willfully ignorant, or they know the facts and they don't care. They just want something. It's going to benefit me. It's going to work in my favor. I know it's not right, but it's going to work in my favor.
Well, and many times people will support something that isn't in their favor.
Right.
People will support things that are not in their favor.
Having to pay for Obamacare when you thought you were going to get something for free.
Right. Well, I didn't know I was going to have to pay for it. Really?
Eventually, you're going to.
You've got to be kidding me. Well, look at it. Look at the whole thing with whether it was California or Colorado or Vermont when it came to single-payer system. It got to the point where California didn't even want to put the funding mechanism in because they know people didn't want to hear about that. Let's just do the whole pretend thing that we can live in a pretend world that things just automatically happen, which is the Ocasio-Cortez,
yes,
as we know, world. Let's just say we're going to do it no matter what and worry about funding it later on. Well, the real world doesn't work that way.
Right.
And when it does, when we do that, what do? When we say, well, let's not worry about funding it. What that means is we're going to make future generations worry about funding it.
Yeah, it's
we're
not
going
on
to
me.
Right. And that's where you need to break it down and say, when somebody says that to you, what does that actually mean? Where does it go from that point? And that point, it goes to the fact that what you're saying is, my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, we're simply going to say, let's put the burden of what we want today on them. And nobody discusses the selfishness of that. Nobody brings up the selfishness of that.
No. I want mine. I want it now. How we pay for it doesn't matter.
The immorality of that doesn't matter. It's ignored. We ignore the things that really would make us look bad when you break it down what we want to do. I want what I want, and I don't care whether I put the burden on my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. We just won't. We'll walk through life as if that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And when we're challenged on it, we'll say, oh, it's really not that bad.
Well, and you, I mean, you could apply the Ocasio-Cortez argument of, well, we shouldn't worry about the cost to anything, right? The basic income. Well, we're talking about people's lives. We shouldn't worry about what it costs. We just need to do it. Healthcare. We're talking about people's lives. College. We're talking about education. I mean, it is, you can make that ultimate argument with any of it because they can't answer the question. Gillum, who was running in Florida, couldn't answer it. Ocasio-Cortez couldn't answer it. Both asked by CNN, by the way. Jake Tapper was asking one of them, I forget which, and Chris Cuomo was asking the other, how are you going to pay for it? And finally, on another interview, Ocasio-Cortez said, I think it was an NPR interview or something, and she said, no, because we look at deficit spending. And you've got the host going, well, yeah, but eventually that has to be paid back, too.
Well, because you can't confront what the truth is. The truth is they want taxation without representation. And we found that loophole. And once we found that loophole, remember, the country was founded on taxation without representation.
Right.
The colonies were being told what they had to do and had no say in it.
Right.
Isn't it amazing that the colonies found... the colonies evolved into the modern United States today, found a loophole for that?
Right.
The ultimate loophole. We'll have taxation without representation. We'll just do it on people that aren't born yet.
Yes.
We'll put the burden on them. And that's why when they say, well you know, we don't need to discuss how we're going to pay for it. Well, that's because they don't want to discuss how it will be paid for. Mm-hmm. Because they all know how it will be paid for, and they know they can't say it. Because you can't say out loud, I want what I want now, and I'm going to put the bill on future generations who have no say in the burden we're going to put on them.
No,
they can't say that.
You can't be thoroughly intellectually honest.
No, you can't.
And not get a massive backlash. And then beyond that, the logistics of it all, the idea. I mean, just start with free college. You know, they always talk about, well, it's $1.8 trillion in existing college debt. We're not talking about just existing. Start handing that out. Start writing that off. And who else will show up? The people that just paid their loans off. They just paid their loan off a few months ago, and now you're going to give somebody else that money. Wait a minute, I want mine. I paid my way through. I worked while I was going to school. I want my money back. It won't end. And imagine if we did that. Imagine, let's jump into the fairy tale for a moment. And we did that, free college. Well, what's next? Well, I shouldn't have to actually show up. I should just get a certificate saying I'm awesome. Because why should you have to do the work? A basic income. Why should you have to do the work? It's about the effort. Well, if kids just show up to class, we'll give them a 70. Well, in college, why should I even have to show?
No, what's the new
just
one?
Just register.
What was the new one? The story we did a couple weeks ago? Was it a 30?
Oh, the failing grade was lowered.
The failing grade was
F
like
was going to be a 30 or something.
Like a 30, a 20, or a 30.
Yeah. Right.
Which means you show up.
Right. Well, why
the first? The first question. I have a number. Do you have a number two pencil? Yes.
Right. How about this? Everybody gets an A, and then the smart students or the children of celebrities get an A plus if they actually do anything at all.
For anybody under the age of 110, the number two pencil thing.
Yeah.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
He's Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara. Sorry, I'm still trying to get over the cold a little bit that I've had. It's just sticking around for the last month.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
Thanks, Brock in China, who's listening.
All right.
We just mentioned it earlier today.
Yeah.
So,
appreciate it.
What was I going to say?
I don't know.
Oh. Yeah, the whole wrong track, right direction thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it overall, when you just take all the personalities out of it, you look at the economy at the moment, the way that it has been. You look at, for example, in foreign policy, the Iran deal was a terrible deal. Mm-hmm. The president did the right thing on that. In Syria, yeah, there's been some debate, but the right thing's being done in Syria. We're staying, in there. The way the president has made other countries ante up a little bit on NATO, it's all a good thing. I mean, those
sure
no bad things there. The economy's doing pretty good overall. The direction of the country, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the Democrats and what they're proposing, but we go through this process all the time, and we will weed through the insanity of what's coming out, and we'll see how the public responds to it.
Right.
But when you ask me the direction of the country, it's okay. You asked me what the direction of the country was 20 years ago. Yeah, it's okay.
Well, again, it's going to be pretty much the same answer, regardless of who's president
but it's
or
great.
And who's in power.
It's great, though, because I can still do what I want. That makes it great.
There you go.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. All across the world. All right. Let's take a look at this whole McCain-Trump feud in a different way, from a different point of view.
Okay.
And I thought this when I woke up last night and I saw, was it Maggie Haberman from the New York Times, had a tweet out there which said that Trump is so angry at McCain because McCain, in essence, told Comey, and because of the whole process there, the Southern District of New York is now investigating his business dealings, and that's why he's furious. And that just set me off on a thought pattern when I went, wait a minute here. According to the testimony from his former aide and the head of the McCain Institute, Kramer, which is David, I can't think of his first name at the moment, but Mr. Kramer. McCain gave it, the dossier, to Comey after Comey already knew it existed. He gave it to him in December of that year from the testimony from Kramer. All right.
Right.
So the Pfizer warrant, as we know, part of what a significant portion, how much we don't know because we don't know. But we know that a significant portion of the evidence to get the Pfizer warrant was on the, quote, mostly untrue dossier. That was October. So to me, that doesn't make sense because I don't believe that I don't have any information that indicates that McCain was the only conduit that Fusion GPS and others were trying to use to get that information out to the public. I don't believe that's the case. When you look at Evelyn Farkas from the Pentagon, who stated, no, that's why Obama opened up everything in the intelligence agencies, because everybody was trying to get as much of it out there as possible.
Hmm.
So then you had Trump's tweet the other day, where Trump came out, and he's the one that got that going after the testimony was released from Cramer, former associate of McCain. And Trump comes out and says in the tweet, and I'm paraphrasing here, that, see, McCain knew before the election. Well, that's not what Cramer testified. And the Wall Street Journal made note of it. We made note of it. We said, where's he going with this? And then I started thinking from an investigative standpoint, what does Trump know that we don't know? What was in all the emails that were declassified that we don't know? What do they know about the FISA warrant application and all of the emails that were apparently sent concerning that? And I don't know how far these emails go. I don't know. What does Trump know that we don't know? That has not been declassified, that went to the inspector general because they believe there's possible crimes that have happened. I have to ask this question from an investigative mindset. I'm not making an accusation, but I'm making, was that a slip up by Trump? Does Trump believe that McCain knew before the election because of what Trump knows that we don't know, based on all the information that has not been released that is in the inspector general's hands? Because that's a pretty big mistake to make, that it comes out that Cramer says, yeah, the testimony comes out that, yeah, McCain gave the dossier to Comey, former FBI director, but it was in December, and Trump immediately tweets, see, he knew about it before the election. Whoa. Where'd you get that from? And I haven't seen Comey come out and blast the president on it. Have you seen Brennan come out and No. blast the president on that? And I sat there as I was driving into work. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute here. Is there a reason? Because Trump knows a ton of things that have not yet been, well, they've been declassified. They just have not been made public. The inspector general hasn't. Does Trump know something that we don't know? Because it doesn't seem to make sense that he would make that jump and then still be as furious as he is. Was McCain more involved than we thought? And again, I'm simply asking the questions because when nothing makes sense, I start asking questions. When I see the other side making statements, I go, well, that doesn't make sense either. When nothing seems to make sense and none of the dots are being connected, I start asking questions at that point. I could be completely off. But does? Because when you look at it, the way that we know the scenario, well, even if McCain did find out, and by the way, McCain wrote about it in his book.
Mm-hmm.
But he wrote about the fact that he wasn't sure. But I don't know. I don't trust any. As I said, in these things, from an investigative standpoint, I don't trust anybody. The only thing I go by is evidence. Now, remember, Trump was called paranoid and he was called un-American and he was called a fascist because he said the media is out to get him. Well, all of a sudden this week, here in the last 10 days, Ted Koppel came out and said, the media's out to get him. Anybody criticize Ted Koppel for that? Did you hear any criticism of Ted Koppel? Massive criticism?
No.
Neither have I. So what was viewed once as being totally paranoia from Trump, you now have somebody who is far left, Ted Koppel, who put out a liberal narrative when he was a member of a major news organization, that he said, oh, no, they're out to get him. It's obvious. They're out to get him. So, if you see the last 2 years, and we've said this, obviously, there was a coordinated effort. We don't know how far it goes. We don't know precisely how far it went, but there was a coordinated effort in the government to destroy Trump's reputation based on false information. Who knew what at what time? We don't know. Trump actually knows a lot more, and the inspector general does, than we do. Because I'm sure Trump, before he declassified everything, had to look at it to know if he could declassify it. So he knows everything. So I have to ask this question. Is the reason he's so furious at McCain the fact that he believes that McCain was a lot more involved, and Trump coming out and stating that, that Trump knew before the election, which was not the testimony of the Trump associate, Mr. Cramer, that had come out, the fact that Trump jumped to that, was that a slip?
You mean that McCain knew before the election?
What'd I say?
And that McCain associate, David Cramer.
Yeah, what'd I say?
You said Trump.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, yes. Thank you very much. That McCain associate, when Cramer testified that the transcripts came out that, you know, McCain had told Comey in December of that year, and then Trump comes out and tweets, McCain knew before the election. We're like, well, how did you get to there? That wasn't the testimony. Is that because that's what Trump believes based on the declassified emails and the FISA warrant and everything else, that McCain was more involved? I have to ask that question. That has to come up because it seems not to make any sense. And again, it was a Maggie Haberman email or a tweet from the New York Times last night that said, well, Trump's just mad because he told Comey, and now the Southern District of New York is on it. And I'm like, well, no. When he told Comey, Comey already knew because they used the FISA warrant. And if they used a FISA warrant to go after a presidential campaign, Comey would have known about it.
Mm-hmm.
So Comey knew about it already. So our question's always been, what did Comey tell McCain when McCain gave him the dossier? That's another question. But getting back to...
Because if it was December, then we already know that he knew. If it was any time past October.
Yes.
At any time past October. So does the president know something and believe that McCain... The reason he said that, because he believes McCain was a bigger part of it and knew before the election. It's interesting in the number of things, I guess, that the media has gone after the president on, and it would be it would fall in the category of a gaffe or something. Remember, NBC Nightly News interview, where you had Lester Holt asking the president in rapid fire, you know, succession, how many times did he tell you? This being about Comey telling the president that he himself, that the president was not actually part of and the target of the investigation. Well, he told me three times. He told you three times? Yes, he told. What did he tell you on the phone? What did he tell you? And I think he told me like a couple of times on the phone and once in person. Then Comey testified to that not long after and said, I told him three times. The point being is that the president didn't phrase it like, oh, he says he didn't know, or he said he didn't know until after the election. He didn't know until December, but I don't believe him.
Right. Yeah, he didn't write it that way.
He didn't. That's not.
It's not how he wrote it.
That's not how it was portrayed.
No. And it just, when I woke up and, like I said, I saw her email and then I started, you know, following, connecting the dots. Well, wait a minute here. why is Trump obsessed with this? Does he, and why did he say that in the particular way he tweeted out? Did he slip? Did he just see it and say, oh, there it is? He knew before, like we know, we've known already.
Right.
Because Trump really didn't get hit hard. You noticed he didn't get hit hard by anybody. He didn't get hit hard by Comey, anybody in the FBI, for making that tweet, which was clearly not the testimony. And the Wall Street Journal brought it out the other day. Well, why hasn't he been blasted by the opposition on that then? And again, it's just questions. I have when we go through a day where nothing seems to make sense in the dots being connected, then I start asking questions, especially in this. And by the way, the questions that we have asked over the last 2 years have all, I think, I don't know one that hasn't come true. Do you know of one that hasn't come true from the questions that we have asked? I'm not saying that this one is, because this one probably is taking more of a leap than our other questions that we have asked. But I think I will say this, the vast majority of questions that we have asked ended up being legit questions.
Well,
that came to be truthful.
Right. And the president is not budging on this rift, dislike, bashing campaign of John McCain. He's not backing away. It's not like comments that he's made in the past where he says something and all of a sudden it's gone, and he doesn't harp on it. He seems to be fixated on this whole thing.
But it was that tweet statement that disagreed with Cramer, and he wasn't pounded on by the opposition of it, which right. made me think, did Trump slip? Does he know a lot more than we know about McCain's involvement in it? He might not. I don't know. Again, the questions just come up because in this whole thing over the last 2 years, nothing has ever made sense. And when it doesn't make sense, we start asking questions and trying to connect the dots.
Right.
And so then the reason I brought in the other point about Ted Koppel is because people say, well, he's just paranoid. He's just paranoid. Well, they said that too when he went after the media and said the media is out to get him. That it's a witch hunt. Then Ted Koppel comes out and says the exact same thing. Anybody criticizing Ted Koppel for that comment?
Right.
Has there been massive response from Democrats saying Ted Koppel is being ridiculous? I haven't heard it.
No.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio. Toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. I think it's important to ask all those questions because, remember, we started out a little over 2 years ago that Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election. Then Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the DNC computers, and Trump colluded with the Russians to change the outcome of the election. And over 2 years, what we have found out is that the opposite happened, that it was the DNC and the Hillary campaign that funneled money through a law firm and through an opposition research firm to a former British spy who took that money and got mostly false information. That's a quote from Michael Isakoff from the Russians in order to try to destroy the Trump campaign, and when they couldn't do that, try to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 election. That's a far cry from Trump colluded with the Russians to hack the election. Mm-hmm. So we only got to that point by asking many questions as we did, which then we eventually got answers to all of those particular questions and those answers that nobody disputes. Nobody disputes that. And we know that the mostly false information was used to get a secret warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. That's what we learned from the original charge from over 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so, again, we believe that asking any question when things don't seem to make sense is absolutely imperative to do and get beyond just the back and forth rhetoric that we were dealing with yesterday and try to delve a little bit deeper and say, okay, what might be the substance of this? What actually is going on behind the scenes? But we live in a soap opera world where all we want to do, and the news agencies are the same way, let's just discuss the surface level angst against both parties. Okay, what might actually be going on here? Mm-hmm. And we think it's important to do that.
You just have to wonder why the president would just stay on it. Keep repeating it. And ramping it up.
Because he knows things that we don't know. And the things that he knows, the inspector general's looking at to see whether crimes were committed. And it has to do with the FISA warrant application and all the emails surrounding it. And so when the president came out and said, oh, yeah, there it is. See, McCain knew before the election. We have to ask the question. Was the president not mistaken? Did the president slip?
Or did he? Is he dying on the inside to tell everybody right now, and he just let that slip, or just kind of dropped that little, I guess,
with his personality,
small piece of information?
Absolutely, he's dying inside.
Yeah.
If he believes that he has it all, and he has continued to be criticized, that's the other thing. Does he want to get it out?
Right. Here's your forecast.
Historic flooding continues across parts of the central U.S. this week, especially in Iowa, Nebraska, and states that border the Mississippi River will start to see more floodwaters surge their banks. Farmers are anxious to get out and turn over those fields for spring planting in this heavy agricultural region, but it'll be some time before they're able to do that. A coastal low and surge of Atlantic moisture is moving up the eastern seaboard this morning. North Carolina, the mid-Atlantic, will see some soaking rain, and as that system tracks up into the northeast, for Friday, we'll see locally heavy rain and mountain snow for New England. New York City will see rain through Saturday, high today 50. Atlanta, 20% chance of showers, high 61. Sunny for Dallas, high 73. Look for weekend storms as we turn the page on winter and welcome spring 2019. There's your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Thanks so much, John. If you want to get in, we do have a line open, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Right Wing Machine, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You keep saying that, big guy.
But by the way, thanks for a blast from the past. Got an email yesterday. Somebody accusing us of being shills for the Koch brothers.
That's, really?
I mean, that's so 2012. It's like, really? What are they promoting these days? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. You'd think there'd be more money in shilling for the Koch brothers. If we were going to be shilling for them, I'm going to need a raise.
Yeah. I just thought that was interesting. I was like, wow, that's so 2012. Or maybe even 2013.
Yeah.
Certainly it was gone by 2014, 20.
I haven't seen much on them at all lately.
No. No, nothing. So I thought that was really interesting. It was like, really?
Oh, shills for the Koch brothers. No, we're closer to shills for the Everly Brothers.
Or the Doobie Brothers.
Or the Righteous Brothers. The Koch Brothers, no.
Wow.
The Osmond Brothers, possibly. And the Brothers Gibb.
Ah.
Hey, we have a long list of brothers that we're just shills for.
We're just trying to eke out a living and trying to staying alive.
Yeah, we're just staying alive.
I didn't work that out. All right, a couple of things here, and then
you and your jive talking. Oh, it never ends. I wish it would, but it doesn't.
Can you say this as a Democrat?
What?
Former Colorado governor and 2020 Democratic presidential candidate John Hickenlooper questioned on Wednesday why the women running against him for the party's nomination weren't being asked if they would choose a man as their running mate.
All right.
Asked by CNN host Dana Bash at a presidential town hall if he would choose a woman to run alongside him as his vice president, he responded, of course. Governor, some of your male competitors have vowed to put a woman on the ticket. Yes or no? Would you do the same? Of course. Before saying he wanted to ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, how come we're not asking more often the women, would you be willing to put a man on the ticket?
Yeah.
Hickenlooper said, drawing audible groans from the audience in Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah. You should have stopped with, of course.
You know how to answer the correct way to answer the question as a Democrat now?
Hmm.
Well, honestly, I can't tell you because anybody who I would consider as a prospective vice presidential running mate, I would first have to ask them personally how they identify.
Right.
I can't assume that anyone is a particular gender, so I really can't answer that question until I get to the interview process and ask them specifically how they identify. I cannot assume someone's gender.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that the correct? Am I wrong, Democrats? Yeah. Is that not the correct way to answer?
Right.
Where am I wrong? Tell me where I'm wrong.
Right. But that doesn't satisfy, again, the movement. Well, this movement over here, no. It's about empowering women. It's about, well, wait a minute. No, we're supposed to be, you saw the pop artist. I don't even know the guy. That says he's going to change his gender to be non-specific.
Oh, Sam Smith?
Is that his name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
What do you mean?
I'm sorry that I didn't have that on the list of things to talk about because you know what my first reaction? I saw the story,
mm-hmm.
but my first reaction was, I don't care.
Well, where does that apply to anyone else?
Exactly.
And here's the thing. What are you going to wear?
Remember we had one of our listeners.
Can't wear a skirt.
Remember we had one of our listeners who called and said, look, I'm transgender. It's about me. It's not about anybody else.
Right.
I don't know why anybody else cares. It's just about me and what I want to do.
This is how I'm living my life, which, by the way, is libertarian. I promote that however you want to live your life. We're not going to go changing laws in terms of you have to recognize this person, you have to recognize that person. No. Because if anybody can belong to a protected class simply by saying so, then there are no protected classes. What do you do then?
I mean, am I supposed to go out every day and tell everybody that I'm a man?
Well, what about... he's not awake.
Okay.
What about... somebody wake up the producer. It's like T-ball, you know? But the whole question, the answer should have been by Hickenlooper should have been, well, I think it's wrong to focus on any specific gender because I promote the non-gender specific existence of persons. I think we should say person. Would you be willing to have a person as your vice president?
No, you can't say person anymore because the son at the end of person.
Now, that's what they're doing in Canada. They're still on person, so we'll go with that.
Oh, in Canada?
Yeah.
Right, so whatever Canada does is right.
Right,
okay.
Exactly. Now, he's about to be ousted, remember.
Oh, yeah.
We say persons. In the existence of man, we say existence of persons.
Have you ever moved up the evolutionary scale? You say persons.
Yes, right.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You are on such a higher moral platform than I am.
If I were a billionaire, I would run as a liberal Democrat today just for the fun of it, just to be able to answer those questions that way. Well, I think it's wrong to focus on specific genders.
Oh,
we're in an age where we should have no gender. And so the correct question would be, are you willing to have a person as your as your vice presidential candidate? And the answer is yes, I am willing to have a person. But I think we should respect the community, acknowledge the community, like person Sam Smith, who wishes not to be recognized by anything. Therefore, as president, I won't recognize anything or anyone.
I am a human life force.
Yes.
And I am running for president as a human life force.
Yes.
If I win the nomination, I plan on bringing with me, as my running mate, another human life force.
Yes. I think it's wrong to be focused on gender in an age where more and more we recognize that that is not necessary.
I have the genderless mindset. I am more progressive than you. How dare CNN ask such bigoted questions, such bigoted, intolerant, and transgender phobic questions?
Quit asking questions like that.
I'm telling you, we're ahead of the curve on this show. We're more ahead of we're more progressive. We have more progressive mindset on this show than even CNN or MSNBC could ever dream of. We've already got the questions and how they should be asked by the liberal media. The liberal media is not asking the correct, politically correct questions, and they're not being held accountable by the liberal activist. Why not?
I would just be out to one-up them on every stupid question like that. I would end it by saying, listen, do not be gender specific because chicks hate that. Man, it would be so much fun. Seriously, it would just be my hobby. Doing my own town hall. And guess what, CNN? I'd do that in the first minute. You've committed to a full hour with me.
We're a political party of a bunch of dudes and dollies.
That's right. Come on, where are all the ladies at? Well, look at this audience. Looks like ladies' night here. All right. Just go full on.
I love this job. I really love my job.
People would be fainting. I can't believe he said that.
That's what we need.
More chicks fainting?
No.
Oh.
Troll candidates.
Oh, I would totally do it.
Just to troll.
Oh, man.
Look,
it would be never ending.
Where is the modern day Pat Paulson?
Right.
For anybody under the age of 190, Pat Paulson
I miss those days.
Was a celebrity who No, seriously, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would. Why? That's the next step.
Yeah.
Just to troll.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
never ending.
It would be so much fun.
And it would get so much attention. Because you'd be saying so many, in today's terms, offensive things. Can you imagine?
You know, we shouldn't be doing this.
Mm.
We should be doing a network Saturday night comedy show.
Yeah, right. Well,
with all of these ideas that we have, we're wasting our talents on this show.
American Politics is a comedy show. We're already doing it.
Darn, why did we sign that contract?
I don't know. They forced us. Turned the air conditioner off, no. Put a spotlight in our face, yelled at us, screamed at us.
You're going to stay on Red Eye.
That's right.
Yeah. They forced us to do this.
That's right. They forced us.
We didn't want to stay. We wanted to be writers for a new Saturday Night Live.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and by the way, that story that came out. Poll shows that Americans believe Saturday Night Live is too political. That's a Sherlock
question. And 70% believe Saturday Night Live is on Saturday night. We can't speak for the other 30 who said, I don't know. Yeah. No, it's the biggest well, duh.
are we having too much fun here?
Norm MacDonald on his Netflix show had Chevy Chase on. And by the way, it was the first time I'd seen Chevy Chase in a while being Chevy Chase. Or funny. But he was talking about how, you know, back in the day, it was just all, you know, it was like, you know, no rules type comedy. And today it's just really driven in one direction and they focus too much on, you know, the political angle or this and that. And it's just not, you know, in his opinion, you know, all of us old guys say that. The young people today aren't funny. But he was right, though. He just happened to be right.
Yeah, but we thought the old people were funny.
I did, yeah. Absolutely.
We didn't have that. Chevy Chase is making a legit point.
Yes.
They're not funny.
They're not funny. They're not. The writing's not funny. When you set out to be an activist, you come off as a troll. You're basically putting on a live Twitter show. That's what you're doing. That's not very thoughtful, and it's really not very funny. They're very capable, by the way, of being funny. That's the most disappointing, you know, part of it.
Well, I can't imagine the rest of the show having as much fun as I've had in this last segment. Yeah. So can I just go home?
I don't know. Let's take a vote. Chicks, call 866-90-RED-EYE.
Dudes?
Dudes, you stay out of it.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. The thing about Hickenlooper asking that question was, didn't he know? How can you be running in a Democrat primary and not be woke yet?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
He's not woke.
No, he's not.
When I saw the headline in thehill.com, which is Hickenlooper questions why female 2020 Democratic candidates are not being asked whether they pick a man, I went, I'm reading this wrong. There's no way that anybody in any type of town hall meeting running for the Democrats would ever ask a question like that, because they have had to go over that with their staff a million times and their handlers. Look, these are the things you can never say. Because you must appear, especially in the primary season, you have to appear to be woke.
Yes.
Which means I'm running, I'm a man, I'm bad, let's ignore that and move on to something else. Mm-hmm. But I'm bad. I'm white.
I'm a male.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry again.
I don't know why I'm running.
Remind me to say I'm sorry later.
I have some good ideas, and I'm not sure yet whether my good ideas are enough to overcome my whiteness and my maleness.
Right.
That if you're going to run as a white male on the Democrat side, that's the line that you have to tightrope on.
Well, because I would say, I mean, you know, in that spirit, I would say, well, listen, not only of course, that would be it. In fact, what I would do is I would immediately resign and make her president. That's what I'm actually trying to do.
I know.
I'm just get all of the questions out.
I'm scum.
Yeah. No,
I'm worthless.
And I shouldn't be president. However, I want you to vote for me.
I'm only running for president to encourage women to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Explain that one.
Yes. I'm here because we all know how much help women need. Oh crap. Oh, crap. I didn't mean that. Oh, can we go to a commercial? Can we please? Oh, I didn't mean to say that.
I'm here. I'm here to tell women what to do.
Oh, man. I think we all know where a woman's place is. Oh, did I say that? Oh, please turn my mic off. Oh, no, that was wrong.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.